And if it was only the beginning, then really I could just preach on any of the many topics that inspire or provoke me. Taoism, Buddhism, art, music, nature, our UU history and theology, meditation, whatever. I could have just picked something and off we'd go. On the other hand, life is notoriously unpredictable. Any sermon I ever preach might be my last. And so maybe they should all be preached as if they were. So I had to ask myself, after a week of hearing firsthand the stories of the trials and triumphs of this congregation, of hearing its dreams and disappointments, and seeing clearly, as surely you have of me, its pitfalls and its possibilities, what parting or starting gift would I want to leave you with? And so I want to give you the gift of a symbol. Now, we don't put symbols up front very much anymore. One, this comes from our Puritan forebears who'd had their fill of icons and stained glass and the bones of saints in a box up front and so forth. For a long period of time, there might have been a communion table or some stained glass or so forth. But as we shed our attachment to what I might call the mythic aspects of religion, we also tended to shed the practice of idolizing them in physical forms. In many houses of worship of many different faiths, there's often an altar or a book or some sort of symbol up front. And even if you don't believe that the statue of Buddha or whatever it might be is anything other than a hunk of wood, there's still some kind of focusing object, something to remind us of that which is larger than ourselves. So I'm going to use a symbol that I found in both the Buddhist tradition and the UU tradition. This empty chair. Not just because somebody needs it back there, and there are still a few seats up front for anyone who's uncomfortable. I want to offer you this empty chair because I see it as the symbol for the past, the present, and the future of this congregation. First, a word about the Buddhist piece. In early Buddhist art, the figure of the Buddha as a person is not represented. There's no human being. Instead, there are footprints, or a lotus flower, or very often, an empty seat. And the conventional thinking is that this is because emptiness, the ever-changing, ungraspable field of possibility that is the foundation of Buddhist teaching, is best represented by an empty seat. Or there's the thought that it was a device to keep people from turning the Buddha into a god, which was ultimately unsuccessful, but it helped hold that thought of the Buddha as simply a well or perfectly developed human being for several hundred years. How interesting, an empty seat to represent just a human being. So we could say the empty chair is the symbol for our best nature, and also our need to work out our own salvation without reliance on some power outside of ourselves. Before the Buddha disappeared, his last words were, "Be ye lamps unto yourselves." When our teachers or ancestors are gone, the responsibility for right living and right relationship and right thinking falls to us. Now on the UU side. Earlier this year, I was sitting up in the chancel at the Newton Church in one of the two seats that we call the thrones. And they look like thrones. You'll have to visit there someday. I was looking up at the carved angels, the Gothic architecture, the stained glass, the hand-carved wooden pulpit and lectern that has Luther and Channing on it. I was reflecting on the cost and the craft that went into that building. It really is grand. And I was overcome with a feeling of gratitude for the people who had given it to the current generation of the congregation, who had given it to me. There I was looking across at James Ford, a couple of hippie Buddhists in our Protestant robes, and I found myself thinking how different our Unitarian ancestors were from us. And I was wondering how they would feel if they could see what had become of their congregation. What would the other ministers who had once occupied those chairs, those thrones, have to say? I'm sure what was going on wouldn't please everybody from the old days, what with the gay rights and the clapping and the shorts in the summertime and everything. But overall, I think if our ancestors had a chance to see what happened in the world around us, I'd like to think that they would be pleased. Maybe not even surprised by what we have become, by what their tradition has grown and transformed into. Now here you're blessed with John Durer and Florence Wheeler, founding members who can still tell you firsthand about the old days. You'd have to be 350 years old to tell us about the old days in some of the New England congregations. Here you have founding members who can still tell you about the dreams and visions that inspired that first group of women and men who left the Sebastopol Congregational Church and became a Unitarian Fellowship. And they can tell you how those dreams and visions have changed. Having living founders is an experience that Eastern Unitarian Universalists are not able to have. It is a gift, but it's a gift we know cannot last forever. If I become your minister, I will, like you, be forever in the debt of people who once sat among you, who seemed at one time an irreplaceable part of this congregation, but who have moved away, or passed away, or converted to some other path, or simply given up. I will never know the faces and voices, in many cases, not even the names, of all those whose vision and hard work remains the foundation of what we have before us today. Whenever we gather, those who came before us gather with us. A new person may take their seat, but that does not fill their absence. And given the nature of this day, I think now, of course, of the ministers who have served this congregation. I think of Dan O'Neill, whose loss was a huge emotional blow. His presence still lingers deeply here, even as more and more people arrive who never had a chance to meet him. I think of Marge Kipe, remembered with such fondness, who provided skilled leadership during the process that led us to sitting in this building today. I think of Bruce Kennedy, whose ministry was a difficult period for the congregation, yet whose tenure was also a time of remarkable transition and visionary activity. And I think of Fran, to whom I owe so much, who will also soon be gone, whether you call me or not. The thought of being called by you to take their chair at meetings and dinner and worship is very humbling. Now, when I first hit upon this symbol of the empty chair, I had two more things in mind. First is the need of the congregation to grow. Rita said that the worship service that she attended in February while I was preaching elsewhere was about two-thirds full. So I expected there to be lots of empty seats out there, interspersed, to which I could gesture to make this point. But for some reason, everybody seems to have come to church this morning. Oh, never mind. During my pre-candidating weekend, I felt strongly from the members of the search committee that the task at hand is growth in membership and growth in spirit. And during this week, whether from the Congregational Council, the board, the RE Steering Committee, from the Music Committee, certainly from the Growth Task Force, I felt the same sentiment. There's a deep awareness here that the enormous potential that this congregation has to finally burst through this pernicious barrier that afflicts all congregations of this size as they try to reinvent themselves, stretch out, and become something bigger. Unlike our human bodies that just keep on doing it naturally, adding more cells until we reach adulthood, to grow church bodies, we have to will it ourselves. The empty chairs stay empty until we fill them. I feel a longing amongst you to take everything that is right about this congregation and to multiply it again and again and again. And there is so much that is right. Your loyalty, your generosity, your commitment, your open-mindedness, your sense of fun, your boldness, and of course, your tender hearts. And that vision of a growing congregation that embodies those is not just one of board members or committee chairs or search committees either. At one of the events this week, I asked folk to write their vision for the congregation. I'm quoting until I say otherwise. To provide outreach to a more diverse population, not to get members, but to provide community with an orientation to the needs of the city and the county. Someone else dreams of a loving, open, spiritual group of all ages who support each other and reach out to the community and world in support of peace with dignity for all. Again, my vision is of our congregation being the leader in framing peace and justice issues in a context of love for all creation, a center for multi-generational activities of culture and education. They weren't all quite so lofty. One person's vision involved people doing their share to keep the kitchen clean. Fair enough. But again and again, I heard a vision of UUCSR leading in the community, confronting oppression and injustice, reaching out to the colleges, to families and children, growing, becoming well-known, in short, changing the world. Perhaps, all right. Oh. 5 years of divinity school, I've been just begging for an amen or a woo-hoo. Perhaps the best was this: to develop a community of people committed to spiritual growth, committed to a deep understanding of ourselves, committed to an enlarged view of our role and contribution to our society and environment, and committed to the power of love. Truly, I could not say it better myself. That's the growth piece of the chair. The other vision of the empty chair came from small group ministry. Here you call it together in exploration groups, tie groups. Small groups where folk gather in a circle with a framework for deep sharing, spiritual reflection, intellectual conversation, the sharing of their lives. In a small group ministry setting, an empty chair is always left so that the group knows it's the opposite of musical chairs. Everybody can get up and move around. More folks can join in the mix, but when it's time to sit back down, there's always one chair too many, not one chair too few. It keeps it open to newcomers. It acknowledges the temporary nature of the current configuration. It helps us avoid omphaloskepsis, which is the Greek word for navel gazing. Omphaloskepsis. Which, if you can use that one in a sentence later today to increase your vocabulary, you're doing good work. The point with this empty chair in the circle, it differs from, say, the old hymn, "May the circle be unbroken," because it acknowledges that our circles are never fully complete as long as there is someone else in need of the gifts the group has to offer. And that as yet met person is seen as equal in their need, in their dignity, in the gifts they will bring. I think that symbol of the empty chair in a tie group can be, should be, extended to every other aspect of the ministry of the church. You can't grow without putting out seats for others and inviting them to join in. Yet while a healthy body is a growing body, and that's true of organizations as well, we cannot for a moment forget that growth itself, measured in terms of numbers, is not the point. The being that will occupy the empty chairs that we will put out again and again is not a membership number, not a dues obligation, not a listing in the directory, not a source of pride at how big we're getting, and certainly not a pledge card. He or she is a person. I'm not here to increase the revenue or size of the congregation, though we will do that. I'm here to tell the world about Unitarian Universalism and its healing, saving message to you and to the countless folks out there who I believe long for it and would love it and commit to it if only they were invited to a seat at the table to find out what we're all about. I stumbled across Unitarian Universalism, and it's a story I hear again and again. An accidental discovery when somebody happens to mention it or you happen to drive by. And I was an undergraduate in religious studies and had never heard of it. It took Herr Fonert, my German teacher, to extend a seat and say, "Why don't you come down?" And I think, why should someone have to wait their whole lives to stumble upon something that gives such meaning and richness and joy? The world is full of people who can make a difference.